You're listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 85, Electrical Storm Cloud.
Episode 85 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is May the 13th, 2013. My name is Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my sleepy slash bloody brother, James Furlough.
Bloody?
Well, you know, it's not your blood. But I'm sure, as everybody is noticing right now, your week has been totally cast asunder. You're frustrated. You're wondering, why hasn't the podcast been posted today? It's already Monday. You're not supposed to do the podcast on Monday. Well, guess what? We are. Because of circumstances outside of our control.
Mother's Day.
Yeah, mostly. And it's like super late at night, but both of us are drinking our particular brand of energy drink. And
seriously, I just got fruit juice all over my keyboard.
That's rough, man. Because that's one of those expensive Mac ones, isn't it?
Yeah, but it looks like I was able to clean it, and so we're good. Hey, do nice. I sound like I'm inside of an echo chamber?
Fortress of Solitude? A little bit.
Yeah. All right. Because there's no carpet in this room anymore, and you're a huge echo.
Yeah.
Echo.
You know, honestly, if you hadn't pointed it out to me and the audience, I don't think anyone would have noticed it. So thanks for that.
There you
appreciate
go. No problems. Now you all can enjoy my plight with me.
Yeah, you know what? That's what's important, really. That not that you feel better, but everybody feels as bad as you.
Yeah, I don't have to win as long as everybody else loses.
Right.
And also, just want to apologize for the squeaky chair that when you hear this, that's my chair.
What happened to your bouncy ball, man?
The carpet is no longer in this room and there are staples everywhere.
Oh.
I decided it probably wasn't the best idea to sit on a rubber object.
It's one of those, it's not that it's a hardwood floor, it's just that it's carpetless. I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, that's different. Okay, well, you know, home improvement aside, let's talk about tech this week. So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, though, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw your way. So throw away.
Hi, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. It's good to say. Required.
It's true, yeah. If you want to follow us throughout the week, get updates, find out when we're going to not be doing the show on time, you can go and go to our Twitter accounts. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough. That's one word. The D right in the middle. Stands for Dean.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. And then if you want to go to the show main website place in the universe, I don't actually know the IP address for it, but I do know the URL, which is almost as good. It's furloughbros.com. Check that out. We got all sorts of clicks and links there. We put all the website, we put all the podcast stuff, breaking them into their different little chunks. We put pictures there of what the podcast is about and titles and various other words and links, like all the articles and videos that we'll be talking about this week. But check it out. It's pretty awesome. Man, good times.
So I'm going to start this off with some awesome news that is also a sore spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So Runkeeper has announced that they are now supporting the Pebble watches, like they promised way back at the beginning when it first started. Essentially, Pebble, you know, they did their whole Kickstarter thing, which I bought into, and and they were like, you could do things like track your running progress, and I think it was like, something like Runkeeper wrote them an open letter, just like, hey, give us a call. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And so that was what happened, and everyone got like super pumped and excited. And so it is finally, they're like, hey, we've done it. You can now use Runkeeper and Pebble together, and it's awesome. And they made a little video that shows it, and it's awesome. And so once I get my white Pebble, which is still not even being manufactured because it's the last color they're going to do because of something, eventually I'll get to try it. Probably December of this year.
I'll be totally honest with you, James. I nearly bought a black one just to upset you. Which, when I realized that that was why I was doing it, it seemed like an awful expenditure of money. But I almost had it justified.
Yeah, whatever.
I know. I was just going to show off. Yeah, exactly. See, that's the other thing. I don't think it would actually have affected you that much, so really.
Yeah, I just want to play with it and actually use it and have one. I've thought about switching over to the black, but I mean, because I could have if I really wanted it, but
you know. I have to tell you a story. So I went to Cabo a couple weeks ago, as everybody who listens to the show regularly knows. And the night before we left to Cabo, because I'm a glutton for punishment sometimes, it's like we're not going to work Friday, it's Thursday night, we got to be up at 6 to go to the airport. But what do I do to this like small group of friends that I went with? I was like, hey, we should go out tonight. That's a great idea. And because they're all gluttons for punishment too, we all went out Thursday night. But while we were out, I ran into this dude that a bunch of the girls were flirting with. Because he's like crazy rich. I'm like, well, why are you crazy rich? He goes, oh, I work for Apple. Like, oh, cool. You for Apple. Oh, I'm in charge of their marketing campaigns. Like, I'm the guy in charge of Apple.com. Ooh. Oh, okay. So then like now I need to like change my conversation. So I was like talking about, it's like, do you get like early updates on products and stuff? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. Like, how early do you know about new stuff? He goes, I learned about new products about a year out from their launch. You know, I'm pretty early on the product pipeline so that I can, like, you know, do all sorts of stuff.
Really?
And obviously, given the context of this conversation, I was like, oh, cool. That's awesome. So, I guess I just got one more question. So I was talking with my brother, and I was really considering buying a Pebble watch because they seemed pretty cool. I like them but I'm wondering if, you know, somebody in your position might recommend me, I don't know, waiting a few months before I go and do that. And he goes, honestly, I'll be totally honest with you. With something like that, I would have to say you're going to have to make up your own mind on it. I was like, oh, okay. Interesting. That's, you know.
Is that okay?
And I was like, sure. I was like, so what you're saying is I have to think about it. You don't have any recommendations. You don't have anything. And he's like, honestly, you could buy me drinks all night long. You can get me totally tanked, and I would not be able to comment on something like that. I was like, oh, okay. So you can't comment on it. That's, you know what? That's good enough for me. And he goes, ugh. I was like, what? And he goes, it's funny. They actually make us take security classes on how to answer questions like that. And one of the things they say is, you got to be really careful about when you say, I'm not going to answer that question. Because people walk away going, oh, you know, perfect. That's all I needed to know. So the fact that he wouldn't answer the question was good enough for me. I'm gonna wait at least a couple more months. You know, I'll wait till 2013 before I decide on my smartwatch technology. Man, makes me wish I was.
Both. I don't know.
What?
I might own them both. I don't know.
Right, that's a good point. You know what? Honestly, who am I kidding? I've got two wrists, right? Like, why not?
Well, I need a work watch, and then I'll have my normal everyday watch.
Exactly.
And I'll have my fancy watch. You know, it's cool. I can have multiple watches.
Yeah, me too.
And then I have my glasses that I wear when it's socially acceptable, which is turning out to be very rare occasions.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Man, the only thing dumber than the Google Glass controversy right now is the 3D printed gun controversy right now. Oh, my goodness. There are guys that are, like, proposing legislation that you'll have to get, like, full background checks to own a 3D printer. They're like, dude, we can literally go to any like hobby machine shop with a downloaded copy of like a CNC program to cut the body out of a gun and put a block of aluminum into a CNC machine, put the jump drive in, press start, and it will cut it out for you. Like, are you people stupid? Like, there's like, what the heck? And I feel the same way with like, with Google Glass. Like, I honestly have my phone out like 98% of the time. I literally set my phone on the table in when like I'm at the bars now, because I want to be able to pick it up and take a picture if like I get the spur, you know, like what? What I'm trying to say is, don't worry, people get over it, and soon.
Agreed. I understand. But I'm just saying, I can have it all. It's okay. I can own them both.
It's true.
I could always sell my Pebble for less than what I bought it for, I suppose. You know, yeah. If I deem the iWatch to be amazing. But yeah, I'll get there.
Cool.
Yeah. So anyways, so, it's coming out. It's official. One more reason to get a Pebble and wait for it.
No, I kind of want one. Actually, I really want one, but not yet. So this is kind of cool. I've become a fan over the last couple of years of CPU development technology, which puts me into a really kind of esoteric small group of people following this trend. But you know, I like talking about it, so hopefully you guys like listening to it. But Facebook and Google, there's this like new trend going on in CPU development that's pretty unique. Because it used to be for the longest time, you know, different guys, like when at the beginning of the industry, you'd be building a CPU, you'd be building a chip, and guys would like, they'd build their own, like, you know, you'd be developing your own language sets, your own tools and everything. And everybody was trying to figure out the best way to build a CPU to make it most universal. And Intel obviously did a pretty good job. And one of the things that they really did was because they were, because of, you know, they're really smart guys, they got a pretty good user base of like people who are familiar with their commands and everything for their assembly languages. But one of the things that they, as they've moved forward, they've always focused on making the most universal chipsets, things that would be most useful to everybody, which is really like, you know, if you look at like what has Microsoft's big thing been over the last 20 years, what's been made them so successful? Well, it's primarily the fact that they, you know, build these, an operating system that can run anything. It gives people a lot of, you know, flexibility. So everything has been about flexibility and the biggest, you know, the biggest tent that you possibly have. Well, and you know, there's been this trend in the last, you know, 10 years that starts sort of moving away from that in the idea of building, you know, smartphones and tablets and stuff, things that are task hardware, software designed for task specific things. And they're still really universal, but they're becoming more pigeonholed, where you'll have more, and it turns out CPU technology is doing the same thing, but it started doing it in, like, behind closed doors, where basically, like, companies that buy gigantic numbers of Intel chips directly from Intel, specifically Facebook, Amazon, and Google, are actually, like, talking to the engineers at Intel, and basically, like, look, we want to, this is how our software does what it does. We want to be able to do that. So if you could make it do that in the hardware, that'd be fantastic.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this is pretty, it has a lot to do with like how, you know, with the limitations of Moore's law, because Moore's law was all about, you know, the number of transistors you could fit into an area.
Right.
And then it was kind of extrapolated out to be, that power consumption would also, or they called it more than Moore.
of course.
And basically what they were talking about is that as the transistors got smaller, they would require less energy. Well, that actually ended up not being true. And so there's this limitation to processing power, and there's a more direct limitation to the broader idea of Moore's law, which is that every 18 months processing power doubles. So Moore's law is still stayed relatively true in its original form, that the number of transistors doubles every 8 months that we can fit into a given area. But because like power consumption doesn't scale at the same rate, overall processing power doesn't scale at the same rate. So there's this kind of, it's breaking down. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. So there's been a move to building hardware specific tasks, things that the hardware will do for the software guys that will allow you to basically give the, you know, the performance of something that continues to scale at that logarithmic rate. So who do you choose to do that for? Well, you know, the guys that buy the most chips, your biggest. Right. And what's really fascinating about that, this is, it used to be that was Microsoft in essence, because the biggest purchasers were HP, Apple, Intel, Dell, Lenovo, all of your laptop, desktop OEMs. But now, because they're no longer, I mean, they're not even in the same ballpark of being your biggest purchasers, it's now the server guys. They're getting to basically pick what the roadmap is for the future. So now they're talking about, and they're doing it, like, they're not doing it very openly. So this was talking about, like, new instruction sets that are being dropped into the new architectures, and how, like, people are like, what is this instruction for? This is ridiculous. It's like, it's proposed that it's like supposed to be like this open, you know, it's like supposed to be this general thing that everybody could use, but people are looking at it like, that's super specific. Like, why would anybody use that? And that's it. And basically what they're saying, what they're coming to the conclusion is that it's either for Google or Facebook or Amazon, somebody who's doing huge server works, and it has to do with how their specific software works. So I don't know. It's interesting. This doesn't affect the end consumer very directly, but I think it will, you know, over time, you'll see the fingerprints of that more and more in what kind of, you know, especially if you're like, even if you're just a developer, like on phones and stuff, you will build these entire models of how to build programs based on the models that, you know, the model of programming that guys like, you know, Facebook and Google are setting the stage for right now. It's interesting. Interesting trend.
So, okay. Yeah, that is interesting. All I really want to know is, when are we going to start integrating memristors into CPUs?
You know what? Honestly, I'm the wrong person to ask, since I don't work for Hewlett-Packard and the guys who are actually doing that sort of stuff.
It's all open source or whatever, you know.
Open license. Yeah, I don't know. I think that one, I think, will take a little bit of time.
The next level. That's what I want to know, you know?
Yeah. I honestly, there's a little piece of me that thinks that we're going to leapfrog that into CPU technology. I bet we leapfrog it. I bet they find some sort of a weird use in really specific types of chips for specific tasks, but just your general purpose CPUs. Because if you think about it, like, you know, the big goal in all of this is to, whenever you come out with the new technologies, you want it to be even if it's not reverse compatible with software and hardware that's been made, you want the architecture, the idea of it, to be reverse compatible so that developers feel comfortable when they jump onto it.
Right.
And so doing that with memristors, and I am not an expert, so if somebody's listening to the show and goes, this guy's an idiot, he doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. Well, probably. I have a little idea what I'm talking about. But how I understand it is, one of the issues is that you have to, like, rethink through how you build instruction sets, because it's – or how you design the architecture so that you can design it in such a way that they use the same instruction sets. They work the same way. And it just becomes this real hairy mess where you don't necessarily get a big performance boost out of it, because you're not – you got to rethink it from the ground up. And so I think where you'll really see them is in areas where you can rethink how to build your architectures from the ground up. And then all of a sudden you'll see these chipsets that will be used in, you know, like I said, specific, like, memory storage, memory processing type stuff. I don't know exactly where you'll see it, but I think that's when you'll start to see the explosion. Whereas with CPUs, you'll see them start to move into 3D CPUs and move away from silicon before they move towards memristors. It's my guess.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, let's get there.
Yeah. Come on. I know that time, like, technology moves crazy fast right now, but it's still too slow.
Seriously. On that front, it is.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. So, you've been following what's been going on over at in Fremont, California this week at all? It's been a pretty exciting week for the city that I work in, especially if you work for Tesla Motor Companies or you're the man that they based Iron Man off of, Elon Musk, is a murderer. And So
what's your boy Elon been up to?
So this is pretty exciting. They said they were going to do it, but they actually did it. Tesla's making a profit. Oh baby, they're in the black or the green, or I can never remember what color it's supposed to be.
It's the black.
That's
not
the black.
Red.
Yeah.
Black Friday.
Yes. Which just, you know, sounds macabre, but it's not. Yeah, so Tesla's turning a profit, which is a pretty big deal. It was predicted early, you know, Well, they came out during their earnings call. Their forecast for this quarter was that they'd make money for the first time, which helped their stock go up a lot. And everybody was like, "Oh my goodness, it's awesome!" And they were railing on what's his name? He lost the election. Mitt Romney, and it's like, come on, man, he lost. You really have to, like, beat him when he's down? but you know, there's just been a lot of talk about, like, you know, your really advanced space age, next drivetrain type systems where, like, well, they'll never make money. They only are able to sell because of huge government subsidies. And you're like, nope, Elon Musk is a genius. He's making all sorts of money now. So they can start paying back their crazy loans and stuff because they do have they did leverage what they're doing to get them an awful lot of money because Elon Musk is super rich, but he's not that super rich. So there's, you know, what's exciting about all this is now it's like this is a turning point and they're looking that sales keep getting better. You know, they've got a huge wait list for these cars. They're not slowing down. One of the big reasons for that is because every time anybody evaluates these cars, they get great reviews.
That always helps with sales.
Consumer Reports did their automotive, you know, test thing or mm-hmm. where their review, and the Tesla Model S was the top scoring car out of like all the cars, not just electric cars, not just super space age cars designed by Elon Musk, but all cars.
I really like their rear doors. I think those are awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're very cool. I like the fact that it's got trunk space in the front and in the back, cuz why not? It doesn't require a carburetor and internal combustion and all that crazy stuff. It's just a very, very cool. And what's nutty about it is it's like there was a lot of companies out there that, you know, when, or the first electric cars, you know, people really liked them because they were electric cars. But that's all they were. It's just like they're basically go-karts with – they're not go-karts, but golf carts with, like, you know, better range and, you know, a enclosed case. But, you know, the drivetrain technology was – it was a proof of concept. It was cool, and they just didn't have a very good range. And, you know, then you've got, like, the – you know, and then a lot of the companies out there said, well, there's already a lot of good drivetrain technology, a lot of good battery technology. I think the problem that we ran into was that, you know, these cars weren't cool enough. So competitors out there who aren't turning a profit yet, they've basically just, like, you know, went out and prettied up the electric car a bit and turned around and aren't making any money because people decided that what they really want is they want a car that can go as far as they need it to go. Mm. So, the brilliance of Tesla was that Elon Musk said, let's build the best battery-powered car out there, like from a drivetrain perspective. They did that. And then they made a ridiculously nice car to put on top of it. And man, if honestly, like, I know we've got listeners all over the country, probably all over the world. But if you guys like can find your way to check out Tesla Model S, they're freaking awesome. It's easy for me because I literally
look awesome.
Oh yeah, have you gotten to see one in persona?
No, I have not.
Oh man, it's
have
worth
it. Have you test driven one yet?
I've really tried to, but because of crazy expensive, none of my friends, I can't do it alone. I can't bring myself to do like, just like man up and do it alone. But I'm like, none of my friends will do it with me.
I'll do it with you.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. You're coming down here in a couple weeks. Oh man, let's do it. Let's put on some suits, but put on some ties and let's do it. Cause they've got
to, we got to look presentable.
Oh, yeah, these are not cheap cars.
Are they going to do a credit check before they let us drive it? Because I know they'll do that with like Ferraris.
I don't think so. They're only $60,000 cars.
only $60,000.
I know it might be $70,000, but they're not like they're not
that
Ferrari.
It's more expensive than my house.
I know, right? I want one so bad. Yeah, I don't think that they will, especially because right now they're in, like, this is such a PR campaign for them. It's crazy. We'll go to Santana Row. So for any of you who are familiar with the Bay Area, you probably know what that is. It's this little shopping center. It's, like, ridiculously nice. But they literally just, like, park the cars, like, in one of the parking lots. Like, they've got a showroom there, but they, like, just park the cars that you can take test drive because they want people to see them. They want people walking around. But, yeah. Like, they've got, like, girls, like, take pictures and, like, you know, like, I'm out partying and I'm taking a picture for the Tesla S. Let's put it on Facebook, you know, and it's, you know, because it's just cool. And, like, the people who they take on test rides, dude, you could not show up in a t-shirt. They would not take you on a test drive. You got to show up looking nice because these people look nice. They're, like, they look like they got money to spend and, you know. And because you need it to justify a car that can only go 250 miles every 4 hours.
I wasn't planning on bringing a suit, even though I was planning on, you know, bringing nice clothes. Like, but I was thinking polo.
You know what, though? We can just pull the California exec thing. Look, sunglasses, sandals, and a button up with a tie.
Okay, you know? We'll figure it out.
Yeah, this is great. I'm excited about this. So one of the interesting parts about this.
By the way, even if this doesn't pan out, 2 weeks afterwards, I'm actually headed to HP Discover. And so pretty much don't read any articles that week because I'm just going to talk for the 2 hours about what it is that I saw.
Nice, there. Okay.
It's like HP's trade show, essentially, where they bring in a whole bunch of companies and you discover a whole bunch of new technology, things that HP and others are working on. So,
yeah. It's funny. You tell me not to read any articles. In the week that I went to Cabo, I didn't read any articles because I was like, I'm taking the week off. Why would I read articles? I felt weird all week long. I was like, I kept reading and because I remembered, oh, yeah, that's right. I do the podcast because I would do the prep work, whether I did the podcast or not. This is like the last hour of the week that I'm like, okay, fine, I'll just do that part.
Yeah, well, it's funny. And I think you also, but what if I miss something big?
Exactly. That was like all week long. I was like, I can't, you know, what happens if something awesome happens? And like the worst part was like, I kept wanting to send you articles. Hey, you should talk about this.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So anyways, back to Tesla.
Yeah, back to Tesla.
You, me, we're going to try to figure it out. Hopefully we can find it in the schedule to go do a test drive. Maybe we should do it on we should try to figure out how to do it on a day that – it's a shame I'm not there during the weekday, you know, because we could go work week in the morning when they're not busy type of thing. They're like, yeah, sure, what the heck, you know, but we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. So one of the this is actually one of the other big things that came up this week, is that so Tesla's got this like weird thing going on because they're this compared to the rest of the auto industry, they're this tiny little nothing of a car company. I mean, they're making waves because yeah, they're making waves because it's this new drivetrain technology and they're making money and they're winning awards, but like they produce less than like a hundredth of a percent of the number of cars that are manufactured in a given year. They do no volume. They financially, their profit margin was basically non-existent before this week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just one of those, like, they're nothing compared to the rest. So the rest of the auto industry has this huge, huge infrastructure of how they sell cars and how they you know manufacture cars. And one of the big parts of this is the retail of cars, you know, all of your car shops, car stores, car, what are those called, dealerships. And dealerships is big business, man. There are a lot of people that make a ton of money and they don't and there are, in many states, there are laws that are specifically, you know, designed for how you do dealerships and how you retail cars.
Right.
Because they tend to favor the biggest players, the guys that are selling for the you know, your big auto companies, Toyota, GM, those types. And so what they really don't like is when some little ant comes along and starts showing that there might be a different way to do it. And Tesla doesn't really have a choice because their argument is, we've got a drivetrain system that can compete and will compete with gas, but it's really kind of a specialty thing. We don't want to be on the same car lot as, a car lot full of Fords. We want to be in our own little world, you know, and it's the Apple syndrome. They, you know, Apple built the Apple stores because it allowed them to, you know, not compete against, stat for stat against Windows. You know, if you had a Mac right here, you know, on your left and a PC on your right, you'd be like, well, the PC is way more, they have bigger numbers of gigahertz and megawatts and gigajoules and, you know, RAMs and all of these numbers are bigger, but their price tag is lower. So why am I buying the Mac again? And, you know, and so Apple, you know, they differentiate, they, a lot of their success came from the Apple stores, being able to step away from the, you know, the other competition, get you out on your own so you can't necessarily compare stat for stat, and you actually get to experience the, oh, this is why I would go with Mac, because the overall experience is better. And even within, you know, retail stores like Best Buy, they have their own little, like, table with like, it's completely out of place in the rest of, you know, from a design, like, you know, the perspective of the store, it's completely out of place, because they want you to feel kind of like you're a little bit teleported into an Apple store. That's what Tesla's doing, because they don't want to compete with internal combustion engines. Because if you compare vital stats, how far can it go on a charge? How long does it take to charge? How much does it cost? It's a terrible deal. But that's not why you buy them. And that's
right. They're trying to move away from the stats conversation and, you know, just talk more about the system and the benefits and those things that are important and the reason why you would buy an electric car.
Exactly. And so... The struggle there is that they're not a giant multinational corporation like Apple was when they started the retail stores. Even though Apple was very small compared to what it is now, it was still, you know, big enough to start retail stores all over the country. And it's been slow. I mean, it's been like 10, 13 years or whatever it's been. And they're just start, you know, man, they're still huge areas that don't have Apple stores even close to them. And Tesla's basic argument is we don't have enough money to put a dealership in every state, much less every, you know, auto mall parkway across America to have our own little place where you can go to check out these cars. So basically what they're doing is they're like driving around, they're going into malls and they're like driving a car into a malls as like a showroom for like one car. And then they're letting you buy them online, which is pretty clever.
That works.
So basically all the retail that they're doing, I think you can buy them in the retail store, but I think they just like put you online, like, oh, here's an iPad so you can go to the Tesla website, and sign up. And, turns out that that's really upsetting to, to the rest of the dealers, because what it allows you to do is it allows you to, if you live in, I don't know, North Carolina, it allows you to just one, throwing that out there. It allows you to theoretically to go online and check, well, maybe Ohio has a cheaper Ford, theoretically. So North Carolina, I don't know, hypothetically might start legislation that would prevent you from being able to purchase cars online, which is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, hypothetically, if this were to happen in North Carolina, it would protect the dealers
out there.
Yeah, it would protect the dealers that are already there, because you really wouldn't be able to buy from anybody except their little own, you know, the territory that you live in, unless you were to drive somewhere else. And so that's exactly what North Carolina is doing. They don't like that. They don't like what Tesla's doing. And so Tesla's starting to already run into some hurdles on being able to, you know, sell cars. And what's ridiculous about it is they don't have any dealerships or anything in North Carolina. So they literally wouldn't be able to sell cars in North Carolina if this bill passes, which, you know, land of the free. but, you know, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating. It's like Tesla, like, you know, just really leveraging all these like super modern technologies and pushing industries forward. And, you know, you always hear like the drumbeat of it's the oil guys, the oil companies are going to be the one they killed the electric car. And you just realize that, man, when you disrupt an industry, people get upset. They do not like it. and so I think it's going to be really interesting and fun to watch over the course of the next, 50 years, really, as this transition happens, because, you know, the disruption is beginning. And now that they're making money, it seems to really point in the direction that this perhaps is a legitimate, you know, this is the beginning of the swelling of the wave as it's like heading towards shore. And it's already meeting some fierce resistance from people that I don't think anybody are like, oh yeah, that's right, this will affect them too. So I'm really curious to watch this over the next years, to see who else like tries to throw up a roadblock that you don't even think about. It just is like all of a sudden, I guess it's setting in for me that, man, they really are going against a Goliath of an industry that's very entrenched. They have a lot of friends in all over the place, financial and, you know, legislative, and they're going to do what they can to protect their little fiefdoms. Oh, it's interesting. It's exciting. But if anybody can do it, Iron Man can. I saw him take out entire armies all on his own before.
It works. So I went online and I'm ordering a Tesla right now.
Say you've been awfully silent, so that's, I was wondering what you were doing.
And it's it will only cost me $579 a month for their cheapest version.
Whoa, that's not bad. Except the cheapest version only goes like 120 miles.
No, this one's 209.
Oh, okay.
I'm good.
Nice. How much does the one that you would, you know, the 64 gig one cost, as it were?
Let's see here. Changing car model will cause you to lose your current design. Yeah, sure, do it. Let's see. This is the Model S design, which is the performance, I suppose. I would probably want to get the all glass roof. And the carbon fiber spoiler. I can go 265 miles. I need the performance plus. Oh, I gotta change up my wheels. Let's see here. Wheels to the 21 inchers. Interior, I think beige with. Carbon fiber decor is fine with me. All right, let's see here. I want the Performance Plus package. give me some the tech package, the sound studio package. I got my active air suspension, rear facing seats, dumb, partial shelf, dumb, paint armor, dumb. Let's see. Ooh, a high powered wall charger and twin chargers. Add that, please. Okay, that one will only cost me $1,345 per month.
Dude, I could totally afford that, especially if I continue to live at home.
You would probably have to live in the car.
Yeah, honestly.
To justify that one.
I wonder how much insurance on those sorts of things are, on those things.
Yeah, I guess that's not included, is it?
Yeah. That is part of your monthly nut. It's probably ridiculously expensive.
Probably. I mean, you're not going to get the minimum.
Right, yeah.
True cost of ownership. Let's see here. You'd have to do 3% down. So the total cost of it, ooh, which you could get through Wells Fargo for the loan. What was the total cost? I saw that earlier.
$107,000. Wow. It's not bad.
Yeah,
you know, but think about all the money you save on gas, though. You know,
but so you get $1,000 tax incentive in California. Nice.
Not that takes Oregon. Off literally a hundredth of less than a hundredth of the price, just a little bit less, but a less.
They could tell you if you drive 15,000 miles a year, you'd save $261 per month on gas.
How much?
$261.
Well then, I mean, that basically justifies it.
You guaranteed resale value. What is that? If you do your financing with Tesla, we guarantee that the Model S will have the top residual value of any high volume premium sedan brand after 3 years of ownership. This means you'll receive cash back in 3 years that exceeds the principal remaining on your loan, spread over 36 years. Means your effective monthly payment is lower by this amount. What? That sounds like finance magic to me.
Yeah, I don't get that.
If you're driving it for business, you can deduct the depreciation and interest expense and the operating expense.
Oh, I'll be driving it for business.
There you go. And shorten your commute. Most states allow EVs to drive in the carpool lane, which saves a significant amount of time in rush hour traffic.
Nice.
And you avoid the gas stations. This is funny. And so it asks, how many monthly gas stops do you do? How long does it take you to fill up? And what's your time worth? They'll help you calculate your... Oh, interesting. So the way that they've... The game that they play, so that effective monthly cost, the 13...
What? Hey, this is a clean podcast, James.
What did I say?
Oh. Just doesn't matter.
Okay. So your effective monthly cost, that thing that they're calculating, your actual like finance cost is $1,400 plus you got $200 for other stuff. And then they start subtracting. So they it's interesting. So that, you know how I was talking about that gas savings? That's built into that 1300 number. Tricky.
Well then.
Still looks cool. Still looks like an awesome car.
Yeah. So there's another piece of this puzzle that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. So that guy, Tony, was chatting in an interview, and I guess he's known for just talking pretty honestly and frankly with what's going on.
Yeah.
Just always makes for fun stuff. But they were asking him about driverless cars. And it was funny. He was like, well, he goes, first of all, I don't like the word self-driving or that phrase. He goes, I like to think of it more like autopilot in an airplane.
Right.
And He's like, because that just sounds a little bit more friendly to me. To which I'm like, Google, take a note. This guy is pretty smart. He's insane. Yeah. I know you guys are smart too, but let's be honest. You guys are a bunch of geeks and don't know how to name things and properly communicate things to regular people.
Yeah.
This guy's figured it out. If he's calling it autopilot, you should probably change what you're calling it.
Right.
And then essentially what he said was he has talked with them, and Google was actually an investor in Tesla when it first started, or both Larry Page and Sergey Brin are. Sorry, not Google, but those two specific guys are. So yeah. So he knows them and he talks to them. And he was saying that he is very interested in doing an autopilot type, adding an autopilot feature to his vehicles. And he said that right now, unfortunately, Google's approach is very expensive to do it because of the technology type that they're using, which is like infrared and other stuff.
The LARP?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the LARP. It's the LIDAR, the laser radar.
There you
Sorry,
go
on.
Yeah, LARP is something totally different. And so anyway, so he was like, oh, I'm interested in doing something with them. He's like, I'm not announcing anything right now at all. But anyways, that would be cool. And again, his goal is that in the next few years is to have a car that's like in the $30,000 range.
Right.
Which would be cool. And so he's like, you know, obviously including the autopilot ability, he goes, we'll push the price up a bit. And so he's kind of got an eye on the price for the market because he would really like to, you know, hit the mass market price-wise.
Right.
But anyways, it was just kind of cool. He was like, yeah, I would love to work with these guys. It's an open invitation. And he goes, at the end of the day, they are working on their own thing, and they may or may not use Google's technology, which I'm kind of – this makes me wonder. Like, Google's working on all this stuff and pushing this technology forward.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious as to how are they actually going to take this thing to market?
Right.
And maybe they don't care right now. They're just like, we'll figure that out once we have something to take to market.
I think
I'm just
gonna
concerned that they're gonna alienate all the different auto manufacturers, and the ones like this who want to work with them are like, dude, you need to figure out your cost here because this isn't gonna work for me.
What I thought was really interesting about it was that his complaint was that it's basically the eye, you know, that fundamentally. You know, whenever you have a robot, there's a couple of different theories of you want feedback. You want it to be able to see the world around it and see what it's interacting with. And the more data that you can get in, the more the better response you're going to have from your computer. But it also requires more processing and better technology. So there's always these balances, right? And when you're automating anything, and basically what his argument was is that their eye is really, really effective, but it's crazy expensive. And what he said was, I'm pretty sure we could do the exact same thing, but with a camera, that's taking pictures as opposed to and specifically what's different is Google's technology shoots light out and gets it, measures the distance, and it gets reflected back. What Elon Musk is proposing is, I want a camera that is passive. It doesn't actively shoot out light and get it back as a laser. What it does is it just takes all the light that's coming in, processes that image, and then you withdraw information about your world from that. And that can be done very cheaply, comparatively. But once you have the data, once you are aware of your world, Google's current system and what Elon Musk is proposing would effectively use that data the exact same way, which that is the real magic of what Google's doing. That's where every year they make huge leaps and bounds in doing, you know, all of that signal processing with better equipment in a smaller package that uses less energy, you know, and I think as far as Google's concerned is they just tacked down, oh, let's get a good light source and the LIDAR, the laser radar thing, it was actually They picked that technology because the guys that won the DARPA competition from like 5 years ago, the automated car, that was the technology they were using. It was just one of those things where they went, let's start there because that seems like a good idea. It seems to be working. And so that's where that came from. And so the idea that somebody else would come along later and say, you know, there's something better or there's a cheaper way to do it isn't surprising. And I think Google is fully on board with the idea that, yeah, that's just one extra step that we can do relatively quickly where we'll do that signal processing to get the same data. We'll do that conversion and we'll just add it on as an extra step later on. And because we have super powerful computers, we can do it really quickly and really effectively. And so it's okay. I think what you'll see is a convergence of technologies. Once Google is very confident that their cars are smart enough to do everything that they need to do well, and they've kind of figured out how to drive through a virtual world that they're processing, and that's Elon Musk, I think what he's setting the foundation for, and I'm sure what they're all waiting for is for Google to sit there and say, yeah, we can set these things on the loose and we feel confident that we're not going to invite crazy lawsuits when the first accident happens. And you know, once you get to that point, then it's just going to be open season for what's the best way to process your world. And that's where you're going to find some significant cost savings in the first few years of production. But there's still so much legislative stuff that has to happen along the lines and along the way that I get the feeling that, you know, you're talking, I still think it's, you know, too long before you start to see this in the market, but no.
Well, I liked his comment. So he's created an autopilot for cars at Tesla is important, but not yet a top priority because it's still a few years from production.
Right.
Okay. A few years doesn't sound too bad.
Right.
You know, he didn't say it's a few decades.
Yeah, that's good news. And I think Elon is you know, well, you know, the thing is that it's like if you drive a Prius, the best gas mileage you'll ever get is if you put it on the, or any hybrid in general, is if you put it into cruise control. Because, you know, now the computer and the motors take over and they know what they're trying to do and they've optimized that algorithm to give you the best performance. So it's one of those things where if you can turn it on to autopilot, I'll bet they could squeeze another 50 miles out of that battery, which is really worthwhile. You know, if you can pop it from 250 all the way up to, you know, or 300 all the way up to 350, you know, on a charge, you know, that would be huge. And you could theoretically do stuff like that when the car is driving itself, because it's way more efficient when it is, you know, all on its own than when you're pressing the acceleration pedal and wobbling it all over the place. You know, your foot's not very good at that algorithm.
Right.
But so, oh, it's interesting. It's exciting. I love it.
I know you do. That's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Photoshop, huh?
Yeah, so Adobe made a big announcement this week. It's kind of exciting. So okay, let's start the conversation here. What photo editing software do you use?
Pixelmator, which just updated to version 2.2 in the Apple Mac store, and I downloaded it and installed it. I haven't tried it yet, but they added the two features that were missing between Pixelmator and Adobe Photoshop. So
what's the two
I've got
features?
It all now. Creating shapes, and there's still one more feature that I would like to have, but it was creating shapes and something else to do with shapes that you couldn't do. Nice. Like manipulate them on the fly.
Right.
It didn't have that ability, but now it does. So,
I personally use free stuff. I use GIMP for my photo editing, which, oops, I just opened it. And I also use Inkscape for anything that I'm, whenever I'm doing a Illustrator type projects. And the reason I bring this up is because
I use PowerPoint a lot. That's actually my secret tool.
Yeah. I know, it's kind of weird. I've seen those before, and I'm always like, what is this PowerPoint? What the heck? But yeah, and you're good at it. I'll give you that. But Adobe wants to make their Creative Suite a little more accessible to the general person, so that they are now only charging you $50 for the entire Creative Suite, all of the awesome products. It's only going to cost you $50. $49.99. You are going to have to sign up, because they'll charge you that every month for the entire time that you have it.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Adobe...
$50 a month.
So Adobe Photoshop is moving. It is moving into the cloud. Yeah. So that's the entire Creative Suite. So that's your. That's more than just your Photoshops and your Illustrators. That's also all of your cool video editing stuff, all of your sound editing stuff. I mean, it is the Creative Suite. And it's pretty nice. You know, which as somebody who, you know, who learned on, let me see that. I want to actually look up the actual pricing structure on adobe.com. It's a little complicated, but, you know, I learned on Photoshop. I like Photoshop. That's obviously the premier, professional tool. I think it makes a lot of sense to use it if you're, if you can justify it at all. Oh yeah. That includes their web design stuff is also included. So like Dreamweaver is included in that $49.99 a month, which should be kind of nice. Yeah. So here we got Photoshop. The heck? Why wouldn't you give me the actual names? They give me all of like their icons. I don't know what the, I don't know what these stands for. We got Illustrator. I know it. Okay. Illustrator. That's cool. Nice job, guys. That's a terrible website. But so, and what's cool about it is you basically, you sign in once a month, you have to connect to the internet in order to use the tools. But basically, so like once you get billed, they're like, okay, did you get billed this month? If you didn't get billed this month, your tools will turn off, which is kind of a bummer. But if you do pay every month, you get to use it, all of the different products in the suite, and you get like online storage and stuff, so you can like share it between your different computers. I think, you know, it's funny. A lot of people's knee-jerk reaction to this is terrible. Why would you do that? Like you're alienating your user base, blah, 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 blah. But I think if you're using it as a professional tool, I think about it in the same context as like Steam. Okay. You know, I went out and I go and buy a video game. And I buy Skyrim, for example. And I play, like, you know, a couple hours of Skyrim. Like, oh, that was really fun. And then I move over to another computer. I log in. I download the game. It, no hassles. It just allows me to do it. And what's cool is that they've now synced all of my data to their little server cloud. So when I play on this other computer, boom, I'm, like, playing right where I was. And it updates all that over the server. And that's basically what Adobe's going to allow you to do, is they're going to allow you to have these, like, you know, section-off places where you can use all your tools, blah, blah, blah. It's very cool. They've also got school editions where you can get, like, for $19.99 a month, you can get, if you're a teacher or a student, you can get the entire Creative Suite, but as a student for just a little bit less. If you already own Creative Suite 6 and you want to upgrade, because they always, you know, the upgrade cost is always less, for an entire year, you can get it for, I think it was $39.99, so like it's an extra $120 off. Nice. And the reality of it is that the Creative Suite, if you were to buy it outright, would cost like $2,700. And it's ridiculous to buy the entire Creative Suite 6. And this is, it comes out to, you know, roughly for the.
And you'll get all the programs will be, you know, updated whenever they update them.
Exactly. Yeah, you get all the updates. You never have to upgrade another Creative Suite again. You just have to keep paying.
You have to pay for an update.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's $600 a year is what, you know, for those of you who aren't very quick at math.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Would be what your total cost for this suite would be. And I don't know.
If you had like a job or some sort of freelancing gig that required you to use it on any regular basis, that'd be a no-brainer.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. It's funny because my first reaction was like, I think this is bad news because honestly, the reason why the term Photoshop exists, whenever you do digital manipulation, digital editing of photos, it's always called, oh, I'm Photoshopping it. Why do we use that term? Well, it's because everybody learned how to do that on Photoshop. Because everybody uses Photoshop because everybody mm-hmm. stole Photoshop at some point in their life. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things that it's the, you know, and this is the big thing, and it's always transparent whenever you have these moves, is this is about being able to use, you know, this is about limiting piracy. They're sitting there saying, you know, there's a lot of professionals out there that are using a free version of it or a stolen version of it, as they might call it. And that's cutting into their profits. They don't like it. They've built this huge suite of tools. They've invested a tremendous amount of money into research and development and production. So, you know, pay them is what their argument is. And they're trying to, you know, and I actually think they're doing it right because, you know, that's dramatic. You know, if you think about it, if it's $2,400-ish to buy a creative suite, that's 5 years of the creative suite, essentially, that you buy CS. Instead of buying Creative Suite 7, you can buy 5 years of always updated. And so if you exclude the cost of updates, which is like a $400 to $600 update every year, basically what they're saying is this is like a fresh start where now from now on, you never have to buy the initial package. Every year you just buy the upgrade, but you have to buy it every year. Mm-hmm. So if you're the type of person that likes to buy a copy of Photoshop and hold on to it for 10 years, this is a bad deal for you. But if you're the type of person that, you know, on any regularity updated Photoshop, I guess if, you know, because even if you like, because I don't think you could upgrade from 4 to 6. I think you had to upgrade through 5. So it's like, it was still very expensive. They're actually doing this at a cost competitive and even, you know, in a lot of cases, a cost savings for.
And I think they've realized that they've lost the casual market.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it really is just going to be the professionals who are using it now.
Right.
And, you know, because, you know, like you or me, we're not going to pay $50 a month for it. You know, it's just, there's no way. We were the ones who were buying it and holding on to it for 10 years.
Right.
You know, and the only reason why we were getting an upgrade was because we upgraded our computer and it was no longer compatible.
Right.
And something crazy like that. And so they're just essentially punting on those customers, which I think they're okay with. And because if they don't, they were just going to slowly die because people are going to find alternatives. I mean, I'll be honest. Pixelmator is like $30, and if you wait around, you can get it on sale for like $10 or $15.
Right.
And, I mean, it's like – it's a really, really, really close alternative. It's unbelievable. When I made my D&D maps, which were the size of coffee tables, I used Pixelmator to do all of it, and it was fantastic.
And it's funny. I mean, if you have any talent at all, GIMP is a great. It's not as fast. It's not nearly as powerful because it's free. It's all open source, but all the tools are there. I mean, it's one of those things where you got to get a little creative on how you do certain effects and stuff, and it requires a little more artsy fartsiness. But it's still a ridiculously powerful tool for just your general photo manipulation, whether you're creating photos or editing photos. And I just shrugged my shoulders and I said, I agree. And I think that they've already, you know, for me, it's like I moved over to GIMP because it's just such a hassle to get a crapped version of Photoshop and you
Well, they don't want you as a customer anyways.
I know, exactly.
I mean, you weren't really a customer.
Right, and you know, and I think the only thing that they're going to lose out on here over the long term is I do think for them that the term Photoshopping, I Photoshopped this picture, will slowly start to diminish. I don't think that's a powerful enough term in our lexicon that it will, that, you know, right now it, photo manipulation is synonymous with the word photoshopping, but I think that, you know, given 5 years, especially as it becomes exclusively the tool of the professional, you are going to see people moving away from that. I don't know what word we're going to use. I think we might just be lame and, yeah, I manipulated it with a photo editor, you know, and of my choice.
Edited.
Yeah. It's not like Kleenex where, you know, they're still one of the top producers of facial tissue out there. So that one gets to stick around no matter what product you're buying. I think what you'll see is you'll see Photoshop move away from the mind share a little more, but I don't think that's necessarily bad because I think it's still unquestionably, especially if you're doing anything more than photo manipulation. You know, there aren't very many other web editors out there that are half as powerful as Dreamweaver. And especially when you talk about like your, you know, for like, you know, After Effects and what's it called? The one where the video editing one, you know, Premiere, you know, those are ridiculously powerful tools. And outside of your homegrown tools for, you know, for studios, there's still tons and tons of professionals that's all they use for their video editing. Outside of like Industrial Light and Magic and Pixar, that's what most people use. They use Premiere and After Effects. So I don't know. I think it's a smart move, and I think they actually priced it. I think it's a little pricey, but I think that they priced it in such a way that, because the thing is that honestly, at $20 a month, I might have considered doing it. I just don't want it to.
You think you'd like it to be for $20 a month, be like, let me pick two.
Right, you know exactly. What I mean? Yeah, exactly. I wish you could do
it
for
like.
Why don't
you a la carte the thing where it's like, it's $10 for each thing and, you know, there's five of them total. And so if you get all five, well, that's $50. But, you know, or $15 each. That way, or you get the whole thing for $50.
I think you can do one product, but it's crazy expensive. It's like $30 for one. They want to discourage you from just buying Photoshop. But yeah, if I could grab Illustrator and Photoshop and Dreamweaver for like, you know, $20 a month, that'd be great. I would definitely consider doing that and owning a quote legitimate copy of it. Because I play around with those enough on enough different computers, you know, that's the other cool part about it is that it's like, you know, I could pay $20 a month and have a copy on my laptop, a copy on my work computer, a copy here, a copy there, blah, 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 blah. And I think it would make sense in that context, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Definitely moving to the, to that cloud model. I like it. Cool. Yeah. You know, they're adapting, and that's what they got to do. Otherwise, they will die.
Yeah. Cool, cool, cool.
So the iPhone's doing pretty well in Japan, huh?
Yes. This has actually been a question that I've had for a long time. Because if you follow this at all, Japan was entrenched. I mean, it was like uncrackable. From outside companies, companies outside of Japanese companies.
Japan, not Japan. China.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, did I say China? I said Japan.
No, I was just making sure.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Where it was like you'd have these companies. So, but basically, it was like they were way far ahead of us. They in their technology, they had movies streaming on their phones like years before we did. They had big touch screens. They had they have faster internet. They've got all sorts of different stuff. And for the longest time, Japan had this mentality that they didn't buy anything but Japanese phones, and and which was very good for Japan. And but it just so happens that they sell a ton of phones, make tons of money because everybody owns one. And you know, even though it's a small population, they're a huge market, and definitely something that people wanted. You know, especially because they're just so crazy cutting edge. And about 5-6 years ago, something radically changed in Japan. And this little American company started to sell their flagship phone in Japan, and people were buying it for the first time. And the iPhone just started to take off. And so it's been a big question, kind of like, what happened? Like, what the heck is going on with the iPhone? It's just such a massive cultural shift. And what's really to question here, and what really boggles people's brains, was the fact that it wasn't even the best phone in the market, or particularly unique. You know, we think of the iPhone as this revolutionary phone in America, but like I was saying, they've got all these cool phones over there. They've got, you know, a digital wallet. They've had digital wallets forever. They have video streaming. They have all these things that the iPhone doesn't have yet, or didn't have, you know, at the time that they launched, and people were going for it. And they said that one of the big things that happened first was it was kind of a fashion statement. They said there was no phone that had really captured the hearts of Japanese women from a fashion perspective. And so when the iPhone came in, they kind of positioned themselves as a fashion statement. People started buying them. And one of the big things is, like, if you ever walk through a mall, you've seen those, like, stands where they have like 17,000 different cases that you can buy, and they're all like super cheap and ugly. Well, it turns out like those sell like crazy in Japan. And if you've ever wondered who buys these things, who makes these things, Japan, that's who buys them. And because it was such a standardized bodies, it allows people to kind of go and just, you know, it's the same reason why it happens here, where there's just tons of different options, because they make these little plastic cases for 13 cents. And because everybody owns the exact same size phone, they fit on everything. And it allowed this sort of from a fashion perspective, it allowed this explosion of sales of iPhone. And they point out the fact that it's like, what's weird is that there were other popular phones that had similar things going on for it. So it's obviously not the only, explanation. And now it's like, and what's really weird now is that it's like the Samsung Galaxies is making no headway in Japan at all. It's like your Korean companies, your other companies that are coming in, they're just like, they're barely, they're barely making a dent. And it's like, these are competitive phones. What's so freaking special about the iPhone? One of the things he said, the phone operators produce almost each and every mobile phone sold in Japan. Even the phones by Nokia or Samsung are modified to match the special requirements by the operators to include features that operators believe are important, such as the e-wallet. One SEG TV receiver and wide range of special services by the operators. iPhone still is about the only phone in Japan which is sold unmodified, i.e. just the way the manufacturer has produced it. So it's the same thing that goes on in America as well, but I guess it's an even bigger problem in Japan. Wherein, you know, here it's like the Samsung Galaxy S, you know, I always complain about the different software modifications, because it just, there's so many stupid features, and it's like the swipe to text just doesn't work as well. But that's not Google. That's not Android. That's Samsung. And they're saying that, you know, even with the Nokia, which generally around the world is sold factory default, you're not getting that in Japan. All of the different companies in Japan, they'll go in and they'll add their software that mucks it up, shrinks the overall storage and slows it down and makes it ugly. Whereas, you know, Apple and Steve Jobs specifically was such a fanatic for don't touch my phone. It's not yours. It's mine. That he fought so hard for that, that it was one of the, you know, once again, it was one of the requirements that just like it is in America, that you sell the phone without any modifications. And because of that, there's a real, real fan base for it. It's just the iPhone. The performance is what it is. And so they're really thinking that, you know, the thinking in Japan is that these feature heavy phones get so bogged down in the feature heaviness that it slows them to a standstill and people are moving away from that. You know, Steve Jobs once said, Japanese manufacturers' biggest mistake is they didn't realize how important software technology has become. Most of the executives at Japanese consumer electronic manufacturers were hardware engineers, and they don't get the importance of software or how software business works. So, yeah, that's sort of the idea that's going on there. But what's the most fascinating part about this to me is that I was like, well, man, like, you know, you've got like the reason why for the longest time Japanese people bought Japanese phones is because that's like that's what they do with everything. You buy Japanese cars, you buy Japanese washers because they've got, you know, it's Japanese pride. It's what keeps the economy going there into a large degree is the support of their own, you know, corporations. They're incredibly loyal to the success of their own economy because it helps, you know, high tide raises all boats sort of a mentality. So you got this like foreign thing coming in. So and that's one of the biggest cultural shifts is they're allowing foreign phones to come in and eat into their market. Basically this article, and this is the kicker. This is the one that I sit there and I go, this makes sense now. You're saying, all of these guys that were building phones, the reason they built phones is because they built chipsets and they built screens and they built the hardware and then they just packaged it into a product and they sold that product to their consumers, to the Japanese. Well, the iPhone, all the components in the iPhone, like 50% of them are still made in Japan. So the Japanese companies are like, yeah, we make more money than we've ever made. So it's cool. We don't mind. Like, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense, actually. And they basically were saying, yeah, like, we don't make as much money selling phones, but we make more money than we've ever made by selling iPhones. And it's made up for, you know, hand over fist. So keep it going, Apple. And what's interesting about that is all of a sudden it makes sense why Samsung is having a hard time, because Samsung does so much of their stuff in-house that Japan doesn't make very much money off of Samsung phones. You know, from the hardware perspective, whereas
– so Japan's, it still might be a Japanese pride thing.
Right, exactly. It's not actually that big of a cultural shift. The biggest cultural shift is that the logo's changed or the made in Cupertino. But they're still making, you know, so I don't know. It's interesting. But that's why the big corporations are okay with it, and they're not fighting it from a tariff legal perspective. I thought it was fascinating. That explained it to me. I feel like that sufficiently covers what the heck was going on there. So, yeah.
Now we know.
Yeah. And no one's half the battle.
So a couple more. Are you still using Snapchat?
I am. I enjoy it. I get all sorts of crazy, wacky pictures. And nothing untoward, although that's what everybody assumes that you do with it. But I actually find that that's not what most people use it for, at least not with me. I don't know what they're doing behind closed doors. And that's the whole point, right? You don't know what you're doing behind closed doors. You can use this thing and pictures get deleted and you're good. Well, so a couple of cybersecurity guys were like, well, you know, how safe is this Snapchat thing? I mean, like, you know, when they delete the photos, is it possible to go in and find the photos? Basically what they did is they're like, so, you know, because like, you know, even on your computer, there's like, you know, they talk about the idea that like, if you delete something from your hard drive, it doesn't delete it. It just changes the directory and then you have to have it overwritten. Well,
yeah.
You know, and once it's overwritten, then It's more gone. But, you know, there are tools that on a hard drive you can scale back 2 or 3 overwrites. You have to overwrite something multiple times for a hard drive to really be completely wiped of that data. So they're like, well, how hard will it be really to extract these photos, you know, because of what happens if, you know, the police need it or whatever. So they went in and they found out that not only has it not been like marked for deletion and put into the you can overwrite this area, it's still there. All they do is they go in and they take the photo that you've downloaded and they change the extension on it to an extension that doesn't exist or that doesn't work. So it's like, you know, for those of you who don't have any idea what I'm talking about, you know, like if you have a picture of yourself and it's Matthew.jpg, what they change it to is Matthew.xqz. And if you've ever clicked on a thing that you're like, computer doesn't know what it do, you know, doesn't know what it is, it always asks, should I look online for this extension? And then you go online and it can't find anything. That's basically what they're doing. The iPhone doesn't know what it is because they just changed the name of it so that it doesn't know it. So if you take these files, and they change it to the same thing every time. So what they literally is a file that's designated as something that's been viewed in Snapchat. So they take you can take these files out. They don't reformat them. They don't do anything. They don't overwrite them. They don't scramble the ones and zeros. You just take that file out with the ruined extension. You literally just edit the name of the file from the weird extension to I think it's just a JPEG or whatever it is, and then you click and open it. That's all it takes. And you've got a picture back. It's saved on your phone. So they were like, if you're trying to do illegal or illicit activities on your phone, just be aware. You know, with Snapchat, just be aware. It's still there. And which I've always assumed that Snapchat keeps a copy of everything on their servers, because why wouldn't you? If you got the space, do it. But it's just all the more astounding when you realize that, man, it's not even kind of protected on your phone. It's basically Snapchat can't open anymore. That's the only limitation. So makes me kind of want to go in and find all the photos that have been sent to me, just sort of as a, you know, I can sort of thing.
Yeah.
Except there's no like really like, okay, there's no juicy photos of, so it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I'll get pictures of my friend's dog that he drew sketches over. Yay! that's all I get. So, not worth the time.
Yeah, I've kind of stopped using it, which you've probably noticed, but it was a fun novelty for me. And then yeah. I was like, okay, I like the permanence. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know...
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's the idea of it's the equivalent of like a poke. You want to say something without saying anything. You know, it's what you do when you don't have anything to say, but you want to be, hey, what's up, or something.
Right.
But I'm just like, if I don't have anything to say, I just don't say it anymore. You know?
Right, yeah.
But,
I know what you mean.
Then I didn't have a critical mass of friends who were on it. That also
See, that is one of the difficult things that I find is it's like, I don't know, every once in a while I get laughs and stuff out of it, which is nice. But, yeah, mostly if, yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't even know. I think I still have it on my phone. I do. I can see it. But I got rid of Facebook Poke. No, it's on there too. Oh, man.
I said I didn't.
Cool. Snapchat. It's not as secure as you thought, but we all knew that.
Kind of. I was going to say, well, yeah, I mean, we all knew. You and I knew. We're just getting the word. We're just the messengers.
Yeah. So, last thing. There was a study done that was looking at the number of people who do not turn off their electronics during a flight.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's me.
So the question is, how many people fail to actually turn off their gadgets during takeoff and landing?
I'm going to say 98%.
That's pretty high.
I can tell you what was so funny. So when we went to Cabo, literally the only person that I saw actually turn off their electronics. So I put mine on airplane mode. Does that count? Is turning off your electronic devices?
No, that doesn't. They tell you to turn them off.
Yeah, so literally the only person that I saw actually turn theirs off was the girl sitting next to me. And she turned to me and she goes, "Did you turn yours off?" And I was like, "Yep."
Of course.
Close enough. Whatever.
Yeah, so what they have found is that about 30% of all passengers said they had accidentally left the device on during takeoff and landing.
Yeah.
And I'll admit that there has been at least one time where I was in that camp where I was I didn't even put it in airplane mode. I didn't even put it in airplane mode type of thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and I pulled it up like once we're in the air and it said no service. And I was like, no service? Why would I have no? Oops.
You kill everybody on that plane.
Oh, man. I know. I would have really felt bad.
Really?
About 67% said they had never turned off their phone. What is it? About 67% said they had never done this, always ensuring that their electronics were turned off. Okay, so 67% do it, 30% don't, and 4% are unsure. And somewhere in there, we get to 101%. So, you know, whatever. Yay for math. whatever. Rounding, I suppose.
Right.
And then they asked let's see here. It was 59% of passengers said that they fully turn off their electronics. 21% said they simply switch to the airplane mode. And 5% sometimes adhere to the actual rule. Others were unsure.
What's the actual rule?
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, turns out that there are a bunch of people who are trying to kill us.
Yeah, seriously.
It's not just Elon Musk anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of them. I mean, I usually turn on airplane mode.
I think if anything, it tells us that the rule is stupid.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's one of the big reasons why people are trying to get it changed. Because they're like, obviously, cellular signals and Bluetooth signals and Wi-Fi signals aren't messing up the plane. Like, what are we doing here? Why are we so worried about it? It's just one of those, like, I think what's become clear is that it is such a gross precaution that it's to the point it's ridiculous. And you sit there and you go, like, how is it possible that I can use my phone, you know, we can have like 17,000 devices going on in a house with Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and cellular and TV and, you know, and toasters and radios and everything. And the Wi-Fi router doesn't seem to skip a beat. But the stupid airplane, you know, can't, you know, what the heck's going on there? Well, and the reality of it is like, no, that's a huge critical, you know, if it messes up, it ruins everything. Juncture. And so it's incredibly protected in that it uses really secure signal processing. It has its own, you would have to set out with a device specifically designed to mess with the wireless signals in a plane in order to mess with the wireless signals in a plane. You know, it's like anything that's regulated by the FCC, the FCC. Federal communicate, yeah. You know, which is like your phones, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and cellular radios. All three of those types of radios, those are all regulated by the FCC. You would literally need to do something without that's unregulated by the FCC in order to possibly mess with the stuff that's on an airplane.
Well, and you're like this. They said that, like you said, there's really no proof that it affects it. They went, but to add to it, the FAA permits passengers to use, which this is weird, electric razors and audio recorders during all phases of flight, even though those give off more electronic emissions than tablets.
Right. Well, and I mean, and the worst part about those is that it's RF noise, which is, and this is where the point I was gonna get to was that you know all of your different radios, you know, whether it's like cellular Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, those are all very specific bandwidths. They're very specific signals, and they're all designed to work, you know, within the realms and play nice with everything else. They're mm-hmm. they're specifically designed for that, and they're specifically designed to play nice with airplanes. You know, because they don't want people just walking in with consumer grade electronics and messing everything up. But like, yeah, electric motors just generate a ton of different, you know, RF noise because there's no regulation. They're not radios in a traditional sense. They're not designed to broadcast, so the FCC doesn't regulate it. So you could totally make something that can easily mess with like a an airplane, which is not something that they tell you to turn off. Or you're coming in with a radio designed to mess with the airplane radios, mm-hmm. in which case you're probably not going to be listening to the FCC regulate your FAA regulations at that point. Right. You know, your goal is to take down an airplane. It's ludicrous. It's one of those things where it's like there were rules that were designed back when cellular phones were first coming on, and back when it was just there was a bunch of RF noise, and there was very little regulation in it. And they were like, well, maybe in a really crazy circumstance, this could have an effect. And then the engineers made sure that would never happen, and the FCC and the FAA worked together to make sure that would never happen. And guess what? It's never, ever, ever happened. And, you know, and yet the rule persists. It's crazy.
How long do you think it's going to take?
I'll bet within 5 years.
Hey, okay. All right. I'll say within three.
I was going to guess three, but that's, you know, it just seems, I don't know. The reason why I say five is because, you know, President Obama is pretty progressive about this sort of stuff, but I just don't see him wanting to take it on during this presidency. You know, unless it's packaged in a different bill, or you know, it's you know, it or there's some like really gung ho congressperson. Whereas I think that a different Congress and a different president could, you know, I could see that being something that they want to take on, but just right now in the next 3 years, he's only got like a year before. I mean, this is way more into the political talk than we usually like to get, but
well, know. I would just say, he uses his smartphone pretty often, but I feel like once you get some of those senators who like they've grown up with those devices and yeah. they've been using them, and they're a part of their lives for the last 5-10 years, because tablets are still relatively new in terms of right. you know, mass adoption, then right. you'll start to see it. But anyways, there you go. More evidence that we should be able to use our stuff at all times on airplanes.
Yeah.
I love it. Hey, man. It's been a good conversation. It's Monday night. It's late. We both have to work tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm going to let you go.
All right, man.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Frillo.
I'm Matthew Frillo. Wait a second. I was supposed to say that.
Whoa. Sorry, you steal my thunder there.
I don't know where that came from. It's late. I'm tired. Sorry.
We will talk next time.
Oh, jeez. All right. You like there was like a pregnant pause there, and I just was like, "Boom! I'm gonna get in." It just felt like I needed to say something.
Thank you.